Welcome to episode 53 of Foodie and Bossy Eat, Drink, Met. Thanksgiving is descending upon us rather rapidly, and so we thought we would share a recipe for pecan pie.
Or pecan pie.
Yeah, some people say pecan, some people say pecan. We accept both pronunciations, but people have opinions. Let us know what you think is the right way. I kind of think it's maybe pecan in the south and pecan in the north.
I thought it was the opposite, but you were the one who told me that saying pecan is a can that you pee in, and now I am self-conscious.
So this is a family favorite. It's got that yummy, yummy, gooey middle. Of course, the pecans. Who doesn't love that? And the all-important homemade pie crust. We agree. Sorry, Mom.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. Sorry, Mom. You should make your own pie crust.
You should make your own pie crust. Let's just get that out of the way right from the beginning.
But we did learn some things. I discovered, actually, through a knitting resource, MDK, they send out these messages, and there's often a food one. So they had referred me to this woman, Alexandra Stafford, and she has a blog called Alexandra's Kitchen. So we're going to refer you mostly to her for how to do the pie crust, because after years and years of making pie crusts, I learned some things.
Yeah. Well, and Booty, I consider you much more the queen of pie crust than me. But what I really liked about this recipe is, first of all, she uses a food processor, which I used to do, and then I kind of got away from it. But, you know, basically she has you dump the flour and the butter and a little bit of salt and sugar in and pulse it about 10 times. Then add a half a cup and 2 tablespoons of cold water. This is one of the things that's always sort of finicky, is how much water you add. But I decided to follow the recipe exactly, and this was exactly the right amount. And then you pulse it again until it's crumbly. And then the thing that was a revelation for me is that you dump it into a tea towel and then gather it all up. She calls it like a beggar's purse, and squeeze it together. And it makes this great ball of dough. There's no sort of dough all over the kitchen, all over your hands. I just put it into one tea towel. She has you separate it into two because she does double the recipe, which is another thing I like. If you're going to make a pie crust, you might as well make two. Put one in the freezer, use one right away. Anyway, then you cut it in half and you'll let it rest, roll it out. But I found the proportions of this great. I found the technique great. And I think there might be more pies in my family's future. Because frankly, it was always the pie crust that I was kind of like, eh, you know, and sometimes it'd be great and sometimes it'd be sort of meh. So highly recommend Alexandra Cooks and her website on foolproof pie crust dough recipe. She actually learned this technique by taking a class at Antoine's Cafe in San Clemente, California. And this was from a French instructor who wowed the audience with a tea towel, she says. So, and it is, it's kind of like magic. You put all these sort of crumbly bits in and then you're like, well, what's going to happen? And then voila.
Well, and I do not use a food processor. I use a pastry blender, and I found that that works great. I just don't want to have another appliance, not another appliance. So I will say a few tips that she and I agree on. That you want your butter to be super cold. You want it to be refrigerated. You cut it into little pieces before you blend it. So it'll be a lot easier to blend with the pastry blender. You don't want to add too much water. You don't want to handle the dough with your fingers. I think that's one of the most important things, because your fingers will melt the butter. And that's going to give you a tougher crust. However you gather it with a fork or the tea towel method, once you get it into that ball You're going to rest it in the refrigerator for at least 30 minutes. An hour or two is even better. Then you're going to roll it out and bake it. And one other on the pie crust before we move on to the filling. Mom had a good tip for if you make a pumpkin pie and you're worried about having a soggy bottom, as they say in the British Bake Off, that you should put chopped up pecans at the bottom of your pie so that it's not as soggy.
That's an excellent tip from somebody who buys pie crusts.
Okay, so on to the filling. So for the filling, there's eggs, flour, dark corn syrup, sugar, the secret, not so secret ingredient, dark rum, or I don't know that it matters that whether it's dark or light rum, but you definitely want the rum in there. Vanilla.
I do think the dark rum is better. Remember when we were reading this history of the world in six glasses? And it talked about how dark rum is aged in those charred oak barrels, so it's got a stronger, sweeter, smokier flavor. And I think that stands up more to the white rum, which is it's filtered more quickly and it's not as strong and it is not aged as much.
Very interesting. That makes sense because you want the white rum with your mojitos, but not so much with.
Yeah, you wouldn't want that smoky.
Yeah. And actually, when your mom and I did have a taste test of all the rums that I had, and I had gone to Cuba, so I had like four bottles of rum. And we did decide the dark rum was the best.
Yeah, I think it has the most flavor. But I didn't have any dark rum, and my husband was like, "How is it possible that with all of the alcohol that you have, since you and your sister embarked on this podcast?"
I can't believe he's complaining about that. But so basically, it's a super easy pie to make because you're just whisking together the eggs and flour, corn syrup, sugar, rum.
A little bit of vanilla and the dark corn syrup.
Are we going to say butter or not butter?
Well, yeah, we should talk about the butter
Okay.
because most of the recipes that I have seen call for some butter.
Okay.
But this is what I learned. If you put in butter, make sure that you put it on a cookie sheet because the butter's going to go everywhere and smoke up your house, and you'll feel like you're inside of a charred oak barrel rum barrel.
Which does not sound bad. But the main message here is that it will expand in the oven. So leave some room. If you wind up with a little too much extra filling, then you can always bake that separately in another ramekin, something like that. But definitely going to expand. And then it'll contract when you take it out, it'll deflate again. But you want to leave just a bit of room at the top, and then about a cup and a half of pecans because you want the whole top to be covered in pecans. And if you find that after you've poured it in, the whole top isn't covered with pecans, then you can always add a few more and just dunk them in the filling. So.
Yeah, and it's tough because you want that nice proportion of you want that nice sweet filling on the bottom, and then the pecans are going to float up to the top. So you want a nice proportion of pecans to the filling. My friend Mary Ellen, hi Mary Ellen, she said that she always uses the recipe on the back of the dark corn syrup bottle, which is a good recipe, but it doesn't have any rum. And rum, as Booty said, is the secret ingredient. So you could use that recipe and then just add about a quarter of a cup of dark rum, and that will be really yummy.
This is a great one for Thanksgiving. We've served it for many years, and there's always some nut in your family who loves nuts and
No,
nuts.
and you can make it the day before. And it keeps well. And it is one of those ones that is excellent Thanksgiving, but also the day after Thanksgiving as a sort of breakfast pie, which is a big tradition in our family, that you have to have a piece of pumpkin pie and a piece of pecan pie the day after.
Very, very good.
Well, and can we just say, I think that we have done a very good job of getting people ready for Thanksgiving with some special Bootie and Bossie recipes. There's Aunt Betty's rolls, there's a cranberry sauce recipe. I'm definitely going to do the Rhinebeck Brussels sprouts and the pecan pie. And you can spatchcock your turkey too. So check out all of those recipes on our website, bootyandbossy.com. They're conveniently organized for you by sides and desserts, so easy to find. There's also a little search button. Don't tell us if you can't find it because we don't want to know. We just want to continue to live in the delusion that we're providing helpful information.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so for this episode, we are returning to our book, Anne McDonald's No Idle Hands: The Social History of American Knitting. We are in chapter 14, which is the 40s, Knitting in War and Peace. We have, guess what? More socks.
Yes, I mean, we've seen this before. Here we go again. Started with the Revolution, then Civil War, then World War One. The history of America is largely the history of not enough socks. But we are also, just for a little bit of context, we're coming out of what we have called the Renaissance period of knitting in America, which is in the 1930s, when, remember, people don't have any money, so they can't go out. So they sit by their radio and they knit. The divorce rates go down, so do birth rates. But, what do we have? The National Dry Goods Association estimates that one in every 12 people knit, and that by the time we're getting to the end of the 30s and beginning of World War II, 10 million people in America are knitters. So that is good for the war effort. America doesn't enter the war immediately. We have to wait until 1941, Pearl Harbor. But before that, Americans are doing what they call knits for the Brits. And there's a real effort to outfit the Brits and to support the British against the Germans before the Americans enter that. I will say, however, the Fragment Society sticks to its charter. Remember, the Fragment Society is the oldest continuously running sewing circle in America, based out of Boston. And they are devoted to knitting layettes for America's needy. And at the outset of the Civil War, they say, nope, we're sticking to knitting for people at home. The women, they do that in World War I, and they stick to their guns or to their needles in World War II. And they say, charity starts at home. And so our members can knit on their own time for other causes, but we are going to devote our resources to helping women at home. But again, we see women. They pick up their needles the minute that the men pick up their guns. And I love this one quote from an older woman. This is on page 290. Hands nimble from experience made clothing, quote, for someone over there. You see, I lost two sons in that other war. And somehow doing this, I feel that I'm helping to keep them warm. I thought that was very touching.
Yes. And then when the US enters the war, then they're knitting for their own children. And this transition is wonderfully captured when McDonald relates the wife of a ranking embassy official, apprised by a frantic phone call that her country was suddenly at war, tearfully continued knitting her sweater. Quote, no fanfare, no eulogies, just a job that needs doing, and women doing it as they always have, thoroughly, efficiently, knowing war.
I love that. Because I do think we tend to think of World War II as the era of Rosie the Riveter. And what McDonald is really reminding us of is the way that knitters contributed. And that's captured too in the Brits put out this Knitting for the Army preface. And it says, quote, "Knitting is no longer a pleasant hobby. No one makes jokes about knitters now, for knitting is no joke." I didn't know that people were making jokes about knitters, but okay. "It is a great war industry run by an unnumbered host of workers who ask no pay, expect no profits. The woman who knits, like her sisters in the munitions factories and in the hospitals, is doing important work," unquote. So there is that kind of celebration of women's work and of the capacity for women to enter these new workplaces.
Well, and this is a time that we are personally somewhat familiar with in our family because our grandfather had the unluckiness to be born at an age that he could serve in both World War I and World War II. And so in World War II, that left our grandmother at home alone with three children who were very little and they were very poor. So I can really I empathize with these women who were, of course, the men were not having a great time either, going off to war and in horrible circumstances. But the women were left home by themselves, trying to make do with very little and still contributing to the cause. I mean, and not to compare the two, but it just seems like so the men were contributing full time to the cause, and the women were trying to contribute to the cause while doing the full time work of raising their families.
And being often single parents. And I think everybody wanted to do something. That was kind of the phrase that keeps coming up. I want to do something. And then knitting becomes the thing that a lot of people can do. And knitting is also a way of expressing the love and care for that person overseas. McDonald mentions that, quote, "Servicemen prized hand knits as reminders of home. And home knitters' morale escalated when a soldier wrote of his sweater, quote, 'It kind of laughs at the wind trying to get through. I've appreciated it a million times.'" Can you imagine how happy that would make you to get that?
Yeah, because perhaps you knit on too thick yarn with too small needles. And so it's like armor. And
Right.
in this case, that's great. It's
Yeah.
exactly what you want.
No, and they talk about, a warm pair of socks for when he's hiking. And I thought that was such a great avoidance of they're not hiking in the Alps. They're marching.
Right, hiking, right. And we should say too that it's both of our grandfathers served in World War II, and so both of our grandmothers were left home caring for three small children. So it's yeah, tough times.
Knitting books also, I mean, obviously the yarn industry is trying to capitalize on this, and a number of them are doing things like offering yarn at discounted rates. Macy's is offering, if you buy your yarn there, then bring the finished object back. They will mail it wherever it needs to be mailed. But I think that idea of that connection between the home and abroad, and how a knitted handmade object expresses love. One knitting book advertised, "Nothing warms the hearts of the boys away from home like articles knitted by the loving hands of those they hold near and dear."
Here again, we have, and I think you see this today, where it's knitting is for a good cause. It's helping the soldiers overseas, but it's also helping the knitters who are so frantic and worried and, distraught, frankly. And so that rhythm in their hands is soothing. There's a couple of quotes about that. One is on page 298. "They get satisfaction from the orderly row of stitches falling into patterns of accomplishment, In times like these, there are a few occupations that have that sort of effect. It is quite possible that women in wartime knit as much for the knitting as for what their knitting accomplished.
I love that. Yeah, and I love that idea of stitches falling into patterns of accomplishment. Like, and that gets at that idea of when you feel helpless and out of control, those orderly rows of stitches give you some solace and maybe make you feel like, A, you're doing something and that you have some control.
And that being said, we have the Emily Post, who created some etiquette rules for women who were knitting in public because they were knitting all the time. And she says, quote, "Do not wave long or shiny needles out about in the air. Do not flap your elbows as though you were a bird learning to fly. Do not leave your wool in a bag at your feet and keep hauling it up every so often with a thrust higher than your head."
That is so helpful. Yes, page 304. It said, I mean, words to live by. If you're going to knit in public, do it with decorum and etiquette. So thank you, Emily Post, for guiding us in proper knitting protocol in public places.
Yes.
This is also a tough time because it's war, and so there's rationing. There's no elastic. Nylons are banned, so you have to make do. Do you want to tell about this one suggestion?
I'm not sure how this solves any issues, but it's just so funny. They made castanets by drilling holes in the top of two empty walnut shells and then running a string of yarn through. So attach them to the top of your socks and you'll sound like a gay senorita. Olé.
Everybody should do that. I think everybody should knit some kind of socks, and then the piece de resistance on the top will be walnut shells.
Right. Everybody's getting that for Christmas. Gift giving season is upon us. So, socks with castanets. You're welcome. You heard it here. And do you want to talk about the button
Yeah,
subject?
if you get tired of old buttons, and people did reuse them. I mean, occasionally you'll see a sweater at Goodwill or something, and all the buttons have been cut off. And that's from a thrifty woman who grew up in the Depression. If the sweater was worn, but you still kept the buttons. But if you don't want to do that, what you can do is chop up a ruler into button-sized pieces and drill holes in it, and it's buttons made to measure. Woo!
I'm
So
just
great.
picturing all the
And
splinters.
all the work, it reminds me of that Bob and Ray episode, the old radio show where they talk about how to make a quarter cup of iodine. First, you get 2,000 pounds of kelp, and
You got to buy the rights to the railroad. You've got to get shipping and So again, we have the Hollywood Knits. And on page 305, movie star hand knits for men. Knit your way to his heart. What a thrill for any man to receive a sweater you have knitted with your own hands, especially if it's a style like one worn by a popular screen personality. Show him this book and let him pick the sweater he likes best. Watch his face light up with satisfaction as he chooses his favorite style. When he wears the finished garment, he'll be pleased as punch because you made it for him. Whether he's the outdoor type, the sports enthusiast, or the man who loves to stay home and enjoy his comfort and leisure.
That's sort of the 1940s speak for saying, or he's a couch potato.
Right.
Yeah.
I am definitely the person who loves to stay home and enjoy my comfort and leisure.
I did show there's some pictures of these sweaters in the book, and I showed them to the husband and said, which one of these, I was trying to follow the suggestions, which one of these would you like for me to knit for you? And he said, no thanks to all of them. Especially the one with the puffy sleeves, kind of looks like Seinfeld's puffy shirt there, and the
Nice.
cinched waist, puffy sleeves. Yeah, so we won't be making that.
Yeah. And we also had the knitted soakers.
Because this is the beginning of the population boom. We have 2.25 million babies are born to the point where they even have baby week. And of course, the yarn companies are capitalizing on that. But so there's all kinds of knitting for babies. But tell about the soakers.
Well, they didn't have elastic or rubber, so they were using these knitted diapers, basically. The babies were, yeah, gross.
Those poor babies. I mean, so these were 4-ply absorbent wool or boil-proof cotton that you would put outside of the diapers with the idea that they would sort of soak the quote-unquote moisture, also known as urine. I mean, you had to hand wash it if it was wool, but this was apparently what women, there's one woman who said that she had four children between 1938 and 1946, and all she knit was soakers, and she must have knit over 200 of them. And so instead of the elastic, they had these little drawstring ties at the top.
Her dad's mom had everybody potty trained really, really young because otherwise she was just spending all of her time washing diapers. You had a big incentive there to get them out of the diapers and onto the potty. So, in order for all of this knitting to happen, there were some music
To inspire you, yes.
to inspire your knitting. And there's a woman called Melanie Gall, who came up with a whole album called Sweeter in a Sweater. And it's an album of World War II songs about knitting. And some of the titles are Sittin' with Your Knittin', Stick to Your Knittin' Kitten, The Pretty Little Mitt That Kitty Knit, Her Name is Pearl and She Knits, Knit One, Purl Two. And Knit One, Purl Two is actually a Glenn Miller song. And then we have Since Kittens Knittin' Mittens for the Army and Sweeter in the Sweater, of course. Actually, you can ask Alexa to play Glenn Miller's Knit One, Purl Two song. We couldn't play it for you because it's not in the public domain. But if you, when you're finished listening to the podcast, you can ask Alexa to play that.
And it's actually very sweet. And then Alexa will keep playing various Glenn Miller songs for you, which is kind of fun until you tell her to stop. So,
Because you had enough.
because you had enough. So, lots of good knitting stuff that happens in the 40s that is kind of unique. I mean, some things we've seen before, like the socks and everybody sort of all hands on deck. But then the challenges of rationing, Emily Post instructing how to knit in public with decency, and lots of great songs. I don't think we've seen as many songs.
Yeah, there've been a few, but these ones really had, and some of them slow, some of them fast. And
Well, Booty, what are you knitting these days?
well, it is panic time for any gift giving knitting, so I'm not going to talk about those. Those are surprises, but working my way through some gift knits, and then when I'm in my in-between times, I'm working on this Tideline cardigan by Marie Green. It's simple. I started it when it was my travel knitting when we were in Rhinebeck, and it's really a nice pattern for traveling. It's beautiful yarn. It's Treasure Goddess. It's her non-superwash merino sport. Really yummy yarn that's wonderful in your hands. And it's a little slow because it's a sport weight and it's a lot of stitches, but it's perfect for TV watching or traveling.
Yeah.
So, what about you?
Well, one step forward, two steps back with my Schneeflocken color work. I did finish the base. Remember how I was going to maybe do it completely differently, but this we decided that would be a mistake of a different order. So now I'm on my own mistakes following the pattern, which is not following the pattern. Like I did the color work along the or the bottom of the sweater, and then I was starting to just knit the body of it in the gray. It was kind of getting wider and wider. So I decided maybe I should use smaller needles for that. But probably what it would have been best would be to actually read the pattern where you're supposed to do shaping. And I realized I kind of wanted it to be boxy, but the shaping is the thing that keeps it from getting wider and wider. I did do the smaller needles, and now there's a line where you can see where I switched to the smaller needles. And when I took out all the stuff I'd done before and used that yarn again, it looks a little nubbly. So there's the band where I changed the needle. There's the band where I use the yarn again. And I'm hoping it all comes out when I wash it and block it.
Yeah, I think
But
it will. I think it will. And it looks really good. I mean, I love the colors you chose.
And I was able to get another ball of it's the Taki yarn in a blue and a gray at Webb's America's Yarn Store. So that's good. So at least I have solved that problem. So yeah, I'm not really knitting anybody any Christmas presents.
That's okay. Yeah, we've talked about this before. You know, I did a few things and I'll probably make a couple more things. I have time to maybe do one small project and little ornaments, and that's it.
But I am enjoying that it is in the 30s, 40s, 50s during the day. So that is sweater weather.
Yes.
And so I'm enjoying wearing the gold wing, which always gets compliments every time I wear it. So I'm enjoying wearing that. Well, Booty, I think we have prepared our listeners for some Thanksgiving goodies, and we've taken them through World War II, which I have to say always makes me feel grateful for what we have now and that we're not at war.
Yes. And we're grateful for all of you who are listening to us waste your time.
Mom has discovered, hi Mom, that it's good to listen to our podcast while knitting, which was kind of part of the premise of the podcast. Not sure she missed that.
Don't think she was really listening.
She's knitting now. So
Yeah.
and so yes, grateful to all of you for supporting us and for listening. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't
Don't
knit
knit
like
like
my
my sister.
sister. But do check out our website, bootyandbossy.com.